our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
For those of you who are new to the podcast, Mike and I are really thrilled that the NFL plays a few games a year in London.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
They're not going 16-0, people. You Philadelphia fans can calm the fuck down. That division is absolute trash. 3-13 could win that division.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If only someone had said something about before the season started. I don't know who might have said
something. I don't give
you any
credit for that at all.
How dare you? How dare you?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 86 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. We are living in a Carson Wentz world, and I suppose it's great.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, to say the least. I don't know if it's great necessarily, you know, me being a Redskins fan and seeing the Eagles already having success with a rookie quarterback. You know, if I had told you at this point in the season that the Eagle, you know, before the season started, that the Eagles would be 3-0 and that the Saints would be 0-3, would you have believed me?
I would not have believed you on the Philly side for sure. I couldn't.
Jaguars would be 0-3.
I can buy that too. Hmm. So really, it's just the Philly side that I can't buy.
Yeah, that is seems absolutely. And don't get me wrong, like Philadelphia has not had a tough schedule necessarily so far. So I'm not necessarily thinking, and they're not going 16-0, people. You Philadelphia fans can calm the fuck down.
Well, if you think about it, though, like everybody was bewildered about, you know, Carson Wentz getting the nod, especially since he had that rib injury in the preseason. And, you know, Chase Daniel has always been like a somewhat talented backup. You know, everybody assumed that, you know, the Eagles were just going to kind of tank this year, make this a rebuilding season and have it be, you know, kind of a development year for Carson Wentz. But if you look at their roster from top to bottom, they really should be competitive. They have a lot of talent on the team, you know, a lot of talent that actually I think is going to be hitting free agency fairly soon as well. So, you know, with Carson Wentz, he's definitely giving them the best chance to win. And he's possibly the most developed rookie quarterback I've seen in a long time. I mean, he just does not. He's has the most pass attempts to start his career without an interception ever in NFL history, with over 100, I believe. So, I mean, the dude is more refined than I think anybody ever gave him credit for. Jared Goff is like, what the hell, bro?
Well, and like, don't get me wrong, let's give some credit too to the defense. The defense has only allowed 27 points this year.
And that's what I'm talking about. Like, they're ready to compete on the defensive side of the ball. The mm-hmm. the fact that I understand, you know, Pittsburgh is a little bit mostly all offenses are a little bit worse on the road. But to hold Pittsburgh to 3 points, Le'Veon Bell or not, is a pretty remarkable task in itself. Yeah. So give them credit for that.
They've allowed 10 less points than the second lowest, other team in the NFL, which is Seattle's allowed 37 points this year. So, I mean, that's pretty fucking impressive.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Like I said, they're not going 16-0, you know, but I mean, let's be honest. That division isn't great. That division is absolute trash. 3-13 could win that division.
I don't know about 3-13, but you make a point about Philly. I don't think 4-12. I like the Giants a little more than you. I think I'm still a Giants backer. So I think the Giants end up winning the division when it's all said and done.
All right. Well, let's jump in and talk about what we're here to talk about. That is week four in the NFL. Do a week four preview. And when we jump right in, we see that there is a really early morning game, you know, which means, yay, it's London game once again. For those of you who are new to the podcast, Mike and I are really thrilled that the NFL plays a few games a year in London.
Yay.
So we can absolutely not stand it. We hate the London games. We think it's really unfair to the teams. We think it's really unfair to the fans. For instance, I was telling Mike, For those of you who don't know, I work midnight to 8 a.m. on the West Coast at my day job or night job, whatever you want to call it, which means I miss the first half of all of the London games because I'm still at fucking work. And you can't stream it anywhere online.
Like, yeah, and it's unfortunate because I have to wake up very early to watch a London game, which, you know, I'm all for watching football at any time of the day, but I hate just waking up so much earlier to watch a game.
Yeah, having to wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
Yeah, and they're all like, all the London fans are always like, ooh, and ah, whenever somebody throws like a 30-yard, you know, Hail Mary. And it's like, come on, man. Like, have you ever seen, just, it was kind of like the Australia games for baseball. Like, everybody would like kind of hoot and holler when they saw a 250-foot fly ball. It's like, listen, that's a can of corn, people. Like, we need to calm down.
My favorite is when they booed, I can't remember this was a number of years ago, but, you know, the game was over, it was a blowout. And the team that was winning took a knee at the end of the game, and the fans just went crazy booing. Like, they could not understand why you wouldn't just play it out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at the London game, we have Indianapolis versus Jacksonville, not at Jacksonville.
Yeah, at Jacksonville. It's a home game.
You know, I mean, though, who knows? Jacksonville's been one of those teams rumored to maybe be a potential, you know, permanent location in London. What are your thoughts on this game, Mike? What is your takeaway for it?
The first thought is Gus Bradley going to end up returning on the same flight as the Jacksonville Jaguars after this game is over? Because, you know, there's a realistic possibility if the Jaguars start 0-4, then we might be, you know, hitting a situation where he's fired, which he probably should be. I know you and I have both mentioned that Gus Bradley is just not doing as well as he should be with the talent on this team. So for me,
especially the talent on the defense, like, he's not an offensive guy. Gus Bradley is a defensive coach and has shown to be in the past a good defensive coach, but he's got a loaded defense. That defense is loaded with veteran and rookie talent up and down. And I mean, it should be considered a top, you know, at least a top 8 defense in the NFL. And it is not played like one, not even close.
No, I mean, only 6 sacks generated by the defensive line, which is hideous for what they have. I mean, they should be among the league leaders right now, and they're just not really performing as such. And, you know, I mean, really, from a fantasy perspective, I'm more or less looking at the run game, because I know we have 2 backs there in Chris Ivory and TJ Yeldon who are talented in their own right. And, you know, they get a pretty good matchup here against Indianapolis. I mean, we kind of know, you know, their 3rd in fantasy points allowed to the running back position so far this year. You know, already given up 4 rushing scores in 3 games and 2 receiving scores to running backs as well. So, I mean, that's at an average of 2 rushing scores a game thus far. And I can't sit here and bank on one of those 2 running backs having a good game. Indianapolis and Jacksonville both are very high in pace. So, you know, this should be kind of an offensive shootout style game. But again, I mean, they're traveling a very long way. Maybe they kind of get a little bit of jet lag. So, I mean, if you are a fantasy owner who's kind of getting hit by a bye week crunch or some injuries, and you are in desperate need of starting one of the you know, Jacksonville running backs, then I suppose I would go with Ivory. But both of them have just been so anemic at this point that I can't trust either of them going forward, at least until I see some type of a change in, you know, at least some of the usage or, you know, just some type of production out of one of the 2. I think they just have to sit on your bench until further notice.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're really strapped, I guess, you know, you can roll out Yeldon. I don't know if it's so hard with Ivory back. It kind of totally throws that whole backfield into question, but I probably wouldn't want to throw it either unless I was extremely desperate.
Well, last week in particular, it was pretty much a 50-50 split in terms of the snap count. You know, Ivory got 48% of the snaps, Yeldon got 50%. I mean, so they're going to play an even amount, and I think it's going to end up, you know, as far as usage is concerned, I think Yeldon is going to be the better PPR play and going to be able to, you know, kind of get some yardage in between the 20s. But again, Ivory is going to be the red zone threat. But if Ivory kind of, you know, because Yeldon has had essentially, you know, 2 starts without Ivory around, and he has done nothing. His, you know, yards per carry is under 3. He has just been terrible. And, you know, the only thing that has salvaged his value is in PPR leagues, he's, you know, accrued some receptions. But, you know, for Ivory, if he kind of gets ahead of steam here, I think he could be the guy that actually, you know, is the one that we could actually start on a week-to-week basis if, again, if, you know, they get some type of usage kind of, you know, steady here on the offensive side of the ball. But, again, like, for now, I don't think that you can rely on either.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm really interested to see how Philip Dorsett does. I know a lot of people were really interested in him last week. But you actually had a great call and said, you know, you wouldn't start Dorsett going up against Jason Verrett, and it, you know, that you were more interested in T.Y. Hilton, especially from like a DFS standpoint. But I think Dorsett is a guy who could really break out this week against a Jacksonville secondary that has not been very good this year. So I look for Dorsett to have a really strong game. He may actually be available on a number of waiver wires. I know he's only about 45% owned on in ESPN leagues.
That's terrible. He should be at least 80%. I don't know what people are thinking.
Well, you got to think. I mean, he had the big week one, you know, the 4 receptions for 94 yards. Then week two and week three, he gets a total of 4 catches for 57 yards between the 2 weeks. And he's had no touchdowns.
Yeah, but still.
So
I'm sure
a bunch of people dropped him over the course of the last 2 weeks. You know, kind of going, well, maybe this guy isn't what we thought he was, but I think he should be fantastic this week. I think he could exploit that Jacksonville secondary, which has not been great this season. So I really like Philip Dorsett. I would start him with confidence.
Yeah, look at the Indy schedule, too. You get Jacksonville this week, Chicago the week after. You do have Houston, which is obviously kind of an issue there, but Tennessee, Kansas City, Green Bay, those are all defenses that can be exploited through the air. Dorsett, I know you and I have been very vocal about how much we like his skill set and his talent. So, I mean, if you can buy him low right now, especially since, you know, he only received 4 targets last week and was kind of bottled up in his first start, you know, you might be able to find a guy in your league that just doesn't really care for him. He's kind of sitting there with him on the bench. I think that he's an easy buy low.
Yeah, and I think he's got some interesting matchups moving, you know, even moving past their or moving past those games too. Green Bay, a game in which Jacksonville will, or I'm sorry, which Indianapolis will have to probably be in a shootout. Again, Tennessee, Pittsburgh, the Jets, who have not been the strong defensive secondary we're used to seeing, and then like a Week 16 matchup at Oakland should be interesting as well.
Fantasy championships.
There you go. Let's go. Indianapolis versus Jacksonville in London. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Indianapolis.
I'm going to go Jacksonville. They got to win eventually, right?
I suppose. Or Gus Bradley can come back packing.
It's plausible. Let's go ahead and move on to Tennessee at Houston. Houston lost their main man, J.J. Watt, down with a back injury, I believe. So that definitely hurts the defense. But I'm really interested in kind of will Fuller have a big game against a Tennessee secondary, which is actually halfway decent at times. So
I disagree.
Really?
I absolutely disagree. Yeah. I don't think that Paris Cox is one of the worst PFF graded corners in all football. Jason McCourtney isn't great either. I understand they did okay at bottling up Amari Cooper, but he kind of dropped a couple balls and he stepped out of bounds in their matchup, you know, the last time out there. And, you know, they just kind of gotten lucky a little bit. They faced Minnesota in week one, you know, with Sean Hill at quarterback. That's a lucky matchup. Detroit in week two, who, you know, had a pretty decent game against them. Yeah. And then Oakland, who they just kind of got lucky against Oakland, in my opinion. I think that, yeah, at least for me, like you're talking about Will Fuller, I think Will Fuller is going to have an absolutely monster game today, this week today.
Interesting. I'm not as confident, and I mean, I was pretty confident on Will Fuller earlier in the season. You know, week one, I was on Periscope, and someone was asking me, you know, where would they start him? Would they start him? And I was like, I think I might. I think I like the upside, and you know, I've really liked what I've seen from him. Obviously, we didn't like anything we saw from Houston last week against New England, but I'll be interested to see if he continues to be the vertical threat he was in the first 2 weeks, and if the few drops he's had will become an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and it just kind of put it in perspective here. This is also why I love Fuller, because you have DeAndre Hopkins, who last year against Tennessee, you know, 8 receptions for 94 yards and a touch in one of the games, and then 7 receptions for 117 yards and a touchdown in the other game. I mean, obviously Tennessee has to put a major, you know, amount of pressure on DeAndre Hopkins on, you know, defensively. And then you also have Lamar Miller, who is, you know, getting a ton of touches in this backfield. There's just a lot to worry about. So that's why I think Will Fuller, for the most part, will get one-on-one coverage. And if you give him one-on-one coverage, I think that he has the innate ability to exploit that.
All right. What's your takeaway for this game?
My takeaway was going to be on Lamar Miller, and, you know, for reasons that are not that good, to be honest. This year, you know, I thought that, you know, if you give him more touches, he would be just, you know, be able to manufacture, you know, more fantasy production, and that just really hasn't happened. He's just kind of gone. He's gotten through the year thus far just with sheer volume and being one of the, you know, few kind of healthy running backs that's getting the majority of the touches. But, you know, right now he's outside of the top 15 running backs in terms of actual points in standard formats. And, you know, yeah, you can look at the fact that he's had, you know, double digit points in 2 of 3 games, but, you know, he's had 20 or more rushes in each and every matchup. And, you know, for me, he just doesn't, when you watch him, he doesn't look as explosive as he did in Miami. So, you know, maybe, you know, Joe Philbin had something right there. Maybe he knew that that Lamar Miller was, you know, just more suited for, you know, a guy that could get 15 touches a game as opposed to going over 20 and being a true workhorse. And, you know, does that have any effect on this week? I don't think so. I still have, you know, Lamar Miller ranked as, you know, pretty highly this week. I got to check number 4 among running backs. So I obviously think he's a start, but I do think this is something to monitor as the season goes on. Miller has had kind of nicks and bumps throughout his career, and, you know, overall I think that, the you know, he just doesn't look as explosive out there. So, you know, if I'm a, you know, fantasy owner, I certainly would try and, you know, not necessarily sell high on Miller, but if there's somebody, you know, the Todd Gurley owner is like, listen, I'm done with Gurley, and you can give him Lamar Miller for Gurley, I would do that, even though there's a lot of people out there that don't care for Gurley and think the offensive line is kind of screwed for St. Louis. There's a few avenues I would kind of go with trying to sell Lamar Miller based on what I've seen.
All right, well, let's do a would you rather with other running backs in Lamar Miller for rest of the season then. Would you rather have Lamar Miller or Melvin Gordon?
Melvin Gordon.
Oh, wow. All right, Lamar Miller or Ezekiel Elliott?
I'm going to go Lamar Miller, but it's so close. I wouldn't mind Zeke either. Zeke isn't getting the red zone looks. You know, he got, you know, sniped by Lance Dunbar and Alfred Morris, which I think could easily be, that's not something I envisioned happening. It might be something that happens all year.
If only someone had said something about that earlier, before the season started. I don't know who might have said
I don't give you any credit for that at all.
How dare you? How dare you?
He's on the number one. He looks every bit as a first round running back. If he's getting those goal line looks, he's a number one running back. He's already a top, you know, 11 running back through 3 weeks, and he hasn't gotten.
And I had him 11th, which is perfect.
Shut up! Oh my god, I hate you right now.
Lamar Miller or CJ Anderson?
CJ Anderson.
Lamar Miller, or you already said you'd go for Todd Gurley. I don't know, Mark Ingram.
I'm going to go Ingram.
Wow. Okay, you are down on him.
Yeah, I'm just, it's
Lamar
not.
Lamar Miller or Christine Michael?
Christine Michael.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of gotten to that point.
Christine Michael's looked good, so I mean, don't like confuse the wowing right there that I don't necessarily disagree with you, actually, now, because Christine Michael, I watched that entire Seattle game last week, every minute of it, and Michael looked amazing.
I mean, this is the thing about Miller, right? Like, he's getting red zone looks, but he still doesn't have a touchdown yet. And his yards per carry are 3.6 right now. I mean, that's my issue. He's a little bit bigger than he was the last couple of years. I've noticed that.
And not only is his yards per carry 3.6, I believe his yards before contact are 2.3.
Yeah, so there you go.
Which means, like, he's only getting like 1.2, 1.3 yards per carry after contact.
Yeah, and that's a problem for me. You know, if you look at his stats the last couple of years, he rushed for 1,000 yards in 2014 on 216 rushes, you know, and then you look at last year, he had 10 total touchdowns on, you know, essentially 240, you know, total touches. Right now, he's on pace. I mean, right now, he already has 84 touches through 3 weeks. I mean, that's going to skyrocket him as far as pace goes, above any of his other career touches, you know, is concerned. So for me, like, he's not as explosive, and I don't think that he is the type of back that can go through a whole season of getting these type of reps. So that's the only reason why I'm kind of selling right now. You could easily see a scenario where, you know, he just ends up not, you know, not kind of being able to go through this whole workload and, you know, kind of dropping off a bit.
All right. Tennessee at Houston. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Houston. I think we didn't really touch on Tennessee a lot, but I will give you credit for Mariota last week.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I hate Mariota already, and you know the fact that I kind of recommend him as a DFS play when we were kind of talking, you know, was, you know, kind of just, you know, because of just a product of Oakland's defense being so bad. I will have everybody know that I did not play Mariota in any of my DFS lineups because as the week went on, there's a few more things that kind of came up that made me kind of sway off of him, and thank God that I didn't. But he also ended up outside the top 15 quarterbacks last week. So You won that, you know, quote unquote brag bet or whatever we call it nowadays. So I will give you props for that.
I appreciate it. It's always nice to get one right. You had a pretty good week yourself, and we didn't talk about your Allen Robinson call during the first game, so I'll give you a little bit of props there, and we'll have some other good calls.
Yeah, people were giving me props about that, but come on, Allen Robinson scoring 2 touchdowns isn't some type
of
hot take.
He only had, like, 27 yards or something like that.
It's not a hot take. Like,
he really screwed me in that Razzball Dream League I was playing against Allen Robinson. Got embarrassed this last week. All right, so I'll take Houston as well. Let's go ahead and move on to the game of the week. The two best teams in the NFL facing down against each other. And of course, I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns versus the Washington Redskins in Washington. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
Terrell Pryor, man. Like,
what a stud this kid has turned out to be.
Yeah, I give it up for for Hugh Jackson for just giving him the opportunity to utilize Pryor in so many different ways. I mean, the fact that he was able to rush for, you know, what did he rush for last week? I think it was like 20 yards and a touchdown on 4 rushes. And then, you know, ended up throwing, you know, a few times for like 40 yards and then, you know, 8 receptions for 140 yards. He did that on 14 targets. And if you look at his, you know, if you look at you know, his efficiency, you know, so far he has been targeted 31 times in 3 weeks. Amazing. You know, that's averaging over 10 targets a game. We love to see that. But the fact that he's only caught 14 of them certainly is concerning. Their quarterback is Cody Kessler. And, you know, we mentioned last week we want to get a look at Cody Kessler. Well, we got to look at him, and it's not very inspiring, to say the least. So, you know, for me, I love Terrell Pryor. If he is available, you need to pick him up just based on sheer volume alone. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about Josh Gordon here in a second, but I think that Pryor is a really nice upside wide receiver 3 for this week. He's certainly a viable play. I, you know, think that he is an upside wide receiver 3. I also think on DFS, you know, we'll mention him in the DFS show, but he is still not getting priced up on DraftKings. Definitely somebody that you need to target. But at least for the year, man, I think Terrell Pryor is really going to stay a focal point of this offense and somebody that I really like. And I will just mention off you know, the Terrell Pryor topic that I think this is going to be a really nice Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson game. Washington hasn't been very good against running backs this year. I mean, they really haven't been good in general on defense. But
I'm more interested in Crowell because the interior of that offensive or that defensive line for Washington is. It was atrocious to begin the season, and they've had some major injuries as well.
Yeah, you look at Dallas and, you know, what they were able to do against them, and, you know, also Pitt. D'Angelo Williams had his, you know, career game in week 1 against them. So, yeah, I certainly think that this is more so a Carell game. But Duke Johnson did kind of show some flashes last week after having a couple anemic weeks to start off the season. So I love Crowell the most of this Browns offense this week. But I do just want to mention that Pryor is going to stay a focal point of this team. The targets are there. The, you know, just everything is there for him to have a pretty nice season.
Yeah. My takeaway, if I told you there was a wide receiver that is heavily involved in a high or what wants to be a high powered offense, and is widely owned, 40
Jameson Crowder.
Yeah, that's the boy. You and I both talked about him earlier or before the start of the season as a guy who could emerge, especially in PPR leagues. And you were starting to see Jamison Crowder emerge. If you do not own him in PPR and half PPR leagues, and he is still available on your wire, drop whoever you need to go get this kid. He is a focal point of this Washington offense. He is taking away a lot of the targets that Jordan Reed should be getting. But he gets open. He's amazing in space. He reminds me a lot of Percy Harvin.
Yeah, he's great, man. He's been targeted at least 7 times in all 3 games. You can't really, he was a stud defensive or DFS play last week as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm so happy that he scored a touchdown. I don't know why, you know, people are not talking about Crowder more, because, you know, DeSean Jackson has been going through his kind of ups and downs in terms of injuries.
Yeah, injuries, and yeah.
It just kind of continues with him. And then, you know, you have an offense here in Washington that is so pass oriented. It's almost not even funny. 59 rush attempts on the season for Washington. That's 30th in all football.
Not only did he have a touchdown though last week, he was wide open on a play that Cousins didn't see him on. Cousins ended up dumping the ball off to Jordan Reed. He was about 25 yards behind the defense.
Yeah, there you go. And those aren't going to stop. Like, no. Because the Washington offense is the way it is, you know, 4th and pass attempts on the season, you know, with 125. That's only behind Jacksonville, New Orleans, and Tampa Bay of all teams. Go figure. But, you know, the fact that they don't rush the ball well and, you know, don't rush really at all with only 59 attempts in 3 games goes to tell me that Jamison Crowder needs to be owned everywhere, especially in PPR leagues. I love him, and I think that he can finish as a top 20 PPR wide receiver for the rest of the season.
Wow. I don't know if I would necessarily. Oh man, actually, I might actually say top 20. That's he's good, and he could turn into a Percy Harvin type kind of player. Reminds me a lot of him. Very shifty, small kid. You know, he could run into injury problems at some point because of the way he runs over the middle. But for now, he's in a high volume offense on a team that the quarterback can't seem to throw well down the field. And so they're going to be he's going to be mostly looking at short and intermediate routes, which is where Crowder excels. So I really like Crowder for this game and just in general for the rest of the season.
Right now, 24th on PPR wide receiver ranks.
There you
just
go.
Saying.
All right. Cleveland Browns at the Washington Redskins. Mike, who you got?
Gotta go Washington.
I'm going to say Washington, but I believe everybody loses in this game.
Just for watching it.
Yeah, exactly. There are no winners when the Cleveland Browns play the Washington Redskins. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Talk about the Seattle Seahawks at the New York Jets. I mean, to me, this game is all about, can Ryan Fitzpatrick rebound after just looking absolutely atrocious against Buffalo?
My God. My God. It wasn't Buffalo, it was KC. But
I'm sorry, Kansas City. You're right. It was... Yeah, Kansas City. I apologize for that. Yeah, he just looked absolutely... And I'm going to give Kansas City some credit, but not that much credit.
No, they took some shots, they took some gambles, and they paid off for sure. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick on the road, you know, historically has not been as good, which, you know what, I talk about home road splits. It's easy to assume that somebody hasn't been as good on the road. That's just pretty much anybody. But the fact that Fitzpatrick, you know, put up that kind of stinker last week is not good. Marshall is still going through some injury problems. Don't know if he'll even be right for the rest of the season, which is a problem, obviously. And then Eric Decker now, the shoulder problem, he had a setback with that. You know, Todd Bowles is saying that he thinks that the shoulder is just as bad, if not worse, than it was before. We could be seeing him inactive this week. I don't know if he turns it around. I mean, I like Quincy Enunwa and everything. I think that he's a solid, you know, PPR wide receiver 3-4 type. But against Seattle, in Seattle, I don't know how I feel. I don't think that you should be starting Fitzpatrick anyway. But if you had to, I think that there's other options you can go with, mainly Trevor Siemian.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen – I'm sure I have. I've been playing fantasy football for quite a long time, but I can't remember the last time I saw a quarterback get negative points.
It's been a while. I'm sure like we've seen it.
What was it? Jay Feely got 6 interceptions in a game once. But yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw for 180 something yards and threw 6 interceptions in this game.
Yeah, there was somebody last week that had to start Ryan Fitzpatrick and Carson Palmer in their two quarterback league, and they thought that they were going to do well.
They thought they had a stacked lineup. If you were that person, please take a screenshot of it, send it to me at Justin Mason.
You're allowed FW. In every single league we ever do. Ever.
Yeah, yeah. I've got some free T-shirts from the Rec Room, San Francisco. I'd be happy to send you one, just as a consolation prize.
And a ton of liquor.
Yeah,
as well.
No. Yeah, exactly. All right. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
You know, for Seattle, man, we talk about Christine Michael a lot, and I'm just rejoicing in the fact that I think that he is going to be just as valuable, if not more valuable, than Thomas Rawls was last season. So maybe I have a knack for, you know, predicting these Seattle running backs. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. But, you know, last week, you know, 20 rushes, 100 yards, two touchdowns against San Francisco. You know, obviously San Fran's not that great on defense. But for me, I love Michael the rest of the way. I think that he is a bona fide running back one the rest of the way in PPR and in standard formats. There's really no denying that for me. I have him as a number 8 running back this week against the Jets. I understand that their run defense is stout, but I think that this is going to be a game that Seattle controls. On the other end of things, I'm getting really worried about Tyler Lockett. And the main reason I'm getting worried about him is because I feel like Jimmy Graham is making his presence known just a little bit more now. And last season, we didn't have that as much. And when Jimmy Graham was kind of lost the rest of the way is when Tyler Lockett kind of geared things up. Last week, 0 targets for Tyler Lockett. 0 against San Francisco. And I understand, like, you know, they controlled the game. They didn't really need to, you know, throw the ball or air the ball out or anything. But we also saw 9 targets for Jimmy Graham. And, you know, I'm just getting very, very worried. I think that if you're in a pinch in deeper leagues, that Tyler Lockett isn't a must own. I'm still holding on because I love the talent. But right now, this Seattle pass game with Russell Wilson being hampered by multiple injuries, I just think that they can only, you know, I think that they can only really sustain 2, you know, 2 wide receivers at most. And right now, it seems like that's Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. So I'm getting really, really worried about Tyler Lockett really fast. If he has another dud this week, then I think we are in 100% drop mode for him.
Yeah. No, I'm already there. I'm totally fine dropping him.
I mean, and there are a lot of people that are saying that, you know, he's already a drop for them.
I love his upside, but they're, I mean, especially unless you're playing in a deeper league, in your 10, 12 team formats for the most part, there's going to be someone on the wire with the same amount of upside.
Yeah, I mean,
got a safer floor.
If you had to drop Lockett for Philip Dorsett, absolutely. Done. You know, you're dropping for Dorsett because I completely understand it. But I'm just, you know, and this is more geared towards your 14, 16 team leagues where, you know, you're not picking up the Dorsetts of the world. You know, he was already owned. So, you know, that's kind of more what I'm leaning here. But there is a point here with Lockett. If he's just not getting targeted at the end of the day, like, we can't wait on this all season. You know, we have to react. If you're 1-3 after this week, you need to react if you have Lockett on your roster.
For sure. All right. Seattle Seahawks at the New York Jets. Mike, who you got?
The Jets have to play better than last week, and I think that there is a little bit of a chance that they win this game. I don't know how they would. It would have to lean on Forte, but I'm going to go Seattle.
Yeah, it's Seattle. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Buffalo at New England. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
You know, I don't know who's going to start for New England. It looks like it could be
Jared Lorenzen.
You did calm down. But, you know, regardless of who starts in this game for the Patriots, I think that LeGarrette Blount, we have one more week where we can really count on him as a running back one. He has received the most carries among all running backs, I believe. Don't quote me on that quite yet, but he is somebody that, you know, if you ended up picking him up, then, you know, golly gee whiz, you ended up getting a really nice piece later on in the draft. Yeah, he is leading the league in rushes so far at 75. They just turned to him in the second half of all the games so far. You know, the last 30 minutes is LeGarrette Blount time. He has 4 touchdowns in 3 weeks. I think, you know, once Tom Brady comes back, I think that this is going to be an offense in New England that turns to more of a James White and kind of a fast-paced type of scheme overall. But at least for now, we're looking at a team that is going to grind it in the second half
Gronk will be back. They'll just run the ball less. I mean, if you can sell high on LeGarrette Blount right now,
absolutely.
Please do it.
Absolutely, yeah. And you see that in the pace, you know, for this year. So far, you know, New England is 27th in pace. You know, in terms of, you know, how fast they actually are moving the ball. You know, last season as a whole, they were in the top eight. So you see the difference between having Tom Brady on the field or not having him on the field. I think James White is a really nice buy low. I've seen him in a lot of leagues I'm in, and I am scooping him up where I can because I think he will be a nice factor, especially in PPR formats once Tom Brady comes back.
Agreed. I mean, I guess I need to apologize to Tyrod Taylor for last week and shitting all over him, but I'm going to continue to do it this week. Tyrod Taylor is a crap quarterback. I don't care how many points he puts up. He is not good at football. I will never.
Why do you hate Tyrod so much? Jeez.
Because he was supposed to lead us to the promised land at Virginia Tech and never did. I believe in the Patriots defense. I believe that's the type of team that are going to exploit his mistakes, not let him get outside the pocket as much as he would like to. I think this is going to be an ugly game for Tyrod Taylor. You know, maybe he's not as bad as I've been saying, at least from a fantasy perspective, but I don't think this is a good week to be playing in New England.
No, absolutely not. You know, last year in New England, Tyrod Taylor had a terrible game. Mm-hmm. He went for 233 yards and no touchdowns, only had one rushing yard on four attempts. You know, I really love what Buffalo did last week. Applause to them, really, honestly. Applause to them for having Arizona come in and absolutely mopping the floor with them. But this is going to be a completely different animal. New England's defense is great this year.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely great. Some of the best linebacker play I've seen in a long time from this type of defense. And they've let go of guys. I mean, Chandler Jones being let, you know, having him go and being able to replace him with, you know, Jabal Sheard and, you know, having an offensive line in New England that just really is not that good
The offense hasn't been what's winning them all these games. The defense is giving the offense the ball back in amazing spots.
Yeah. So, I mean, for at least for now, you have a team in New England that is going to be getting Tom Brady back and all hands on deck. So, yeah, I think that is going to be a blunt game. I agree with your Tyrod Taylor take. I don't think he has a very good matchup. And really, I'm kind of hoping Sammy Watkins plays. So that way, if he has a decent game, you might be able to sell him. But he's getting close to drop territory for me as well.
Yeah. You know, it looks like you have to check the Friday practice reports. It looks like he is supposed to miss the Friday practice session, already missed the Thursday one. So I don't think that he is going to play on Sunday, but definitely keep an eye out. And even if he does, I mean, I guess the way to beat the Patriots is deep. But I would feel very scared to have to start Watkins in a game this week.
No, I mean, he probably won't play. It's just, you know, I know Paul Charchian of, was it leaguesafe.com? He has actually been very vocal that you should drop Sammy Watkins so that it's kind of a dump and so that somebody else in your league spends all of their fab on him. And yeah, it kind of takes that away from the pool. And I think that's a very sound strategy. My only issue with that is that I do think that Sammy Watkins has one game this year, sometime whenever he comes back, that we might be able to hang our hats on and be able to trade him and get some type of value for. So that's the only, if I feel like I can possibly make a trade for him, then that's the only reason I would hold on. But, you know, I don't trust this foot injury at all. I think it's going to be something that until
I think you're going to see too many times where he is on the bench for the rest of the game by the second, you know, some point in the second quarter. Yeah.
Or they might just shut him down. I mean, at what point when the Bills are, you know, whatever record that, you know, I guess what, 2-7, three and eight, you know, I mean, like, it depends on the record, but like at some point they are going to shut him down. They can't have him going out.
And it's, you know, I mean, it's for his career, it should be sooner rather than later. He needs to get this surgically repaired.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Buffalo Bills, New England Patriots. Mike, who you got?
Don't think Buffalo's won in New England in a very, very long time. I'm going to go New England.
Yeah, me too. Let's go ahead and move on. Next game. Carolina at Atlanta. I want to see this new, well, it's not a new duo, but what's turned into just like, you know, kind of thunder and lightning in Atlanta, in Coleman, in Freeman, against a good defense, and see which running back prevails.
You want to know the answer to that is you don't start either of them. That's
well, I mean, I think you, I mean, more than likely, if you've got both of them, you're going to have to start one.
I have both of them ranked in the top 25 at running backs in standard. So, I mean, you obviously will need to start one of them, but this is going to be a headache. I think we talked about this last week. It's going to be an absolute headache trying to predict which running back you want to go with. They are going to play the Saints every week in New Orleans, which is like the Coors Field of, of fantasy football. So, you know, this is just a really bad situation. I don't want any part of this running backs. I think Tevin Coleman is going to continue to get the goal line touches, which is going to completely negate Devontae Freeman's value because he is getting receptions. He's getting a ton of yards. He's doing great. But if he's not getting the touchdowns, then it's just one guy is taking away from the other. And then it's just a back and forth situation, man. It's just,
which
it's
is absolutely bullshit because, I mean, let's be honest. Devontae Freeman was the better running back last week.
He was in every
stat category except for touchdowns.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
Devontae Freeman, and I still maintain Devontae Freeman is the better running back over better overall package of a player, and that Tevin Coleman isn't that good.
See, I agree on the first part. I know you disagree.
I know you disagree that you think that you don't think that Coleman is bad. I think Coleman is a bad running back, and I think he is benefiting from being the goal line back, and sometimes that is okay in fantasy. It's less about the overall skill set than the role a lot of times, and this is one of those situations. The better overall player is Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, unless there's an injury, I don't know. I guess both of their upsides are capped. That's the best way to kind of put it. Both their upsides are capped each and every week because of the situation itself.
Well, now let's talk about this game specifically, though. I mean, Carolina, looking at their defense, which running back do you think is the better running back to exploit the weaknesses that we have seen in Carolina's defense this year? Because I think it's Freeman.
Yeah, I would say it's Freeman as well.
I think up the middle, they're just as strong as they were last year. I think on the edge, they could be exposed.
Yeah, they could be. The problem is that Carolina's still pretty decent against the run this year. I don't really have an answer. I think that, you know, the Carolina defense is doing a good job of holding, you know, receiving running backs down. And then on top of that, you know, the middle of their defense is still solid. Their front seven is the best part of their defense. Where you can exploit them is the secondary. Mm-hmm. So, Carolina has only given up 240 rush yards in three games, two rushing touchdowns. Those are solid, solid numbers there. And then if you look at the receiving side, which is where Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman both kind of exceed. They're not giving up a ton there as well. So, you know, 11 receptions in three games and one receiving touchdown. I just think that this is a bad start for both running backs. And, you know, I have them as flex plays because I do think that this is a situation where they're both going to get volume. But on top of that, you can't really rely on it. If you look at what Freeman did against Carolina last year, he had 73 rushing yards and a touchdown. And then he added three receptions for 17 yards in week 16. He played them in week 14 as well and had 40 rushing yards, only three receptions for 20 yards. So I think that is probably what we'll see. I think that stat line is more what we'll see. And then Coleman, he'll probably mix in again for another 50% of the touches, which is what he's been doing, and possibly get a red zone score. But the offensive, I will say this, I kind of didn't mention this at all, but the offensive line for Atlanta has been absolutely amazing this
season. Which is amazing considering what they looked like last year.
Yeah, I mean, they did face Tampa Bay and Oakland, who I think, in my opinion, have a really nice defensive fronts. Mm-hmm. New Orleans is a different story. But, you know, as far as offensive line goes, they are doing an amazing job. Second in run blocking thus far to Oakland's number one, actually. And then in pass blocking, they're doing okay, not nearly as well. But in terms of the run blocking, you can't really ask for more. It will be put to the test against Carolina this week. Their defensive line, you know, again, is really good. And, you know, they are sixth in run blocking, you know, Carolina's defensive line so far. So it's a really good matchup. And when you see that and you have 50% of the, you know, production going to put two different guys, it's just really tough to bank on either of them.
I agree. Do you have another takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of looking at this Carolina, you know, receiving core. I think that this is going to be another, you know, another situation where people are going to be kind of worried about Kelvin Benjamin going to, you know, with Desmond Trufant on the other side. And I'm just going to say flat out that I don't think that's an issue. Kelvin Benjamin stands, what, 6'6", and Trufant is, I think, you know, 5 or 6 inches shorter than that. I think that this is going to be a very nice game for Kelvin Benjamin. I wouldn't worry about him one iota. As far as, you know, as far as the rest of the season outlook on him, I think that he is a borderline wide receiver one. I would put him right up there. If you're asking me to choose between him and Demaryius Thomas, I am choosing Kelvin Benjamin. If you ask me to choose between him and Larry Fitzgerald, I'm choosing Kelvin Benjamin. You know, there's just, I believe in Kelvin Benjamin this year, and he is, you know, I think going to be an absolutely amazing receiver.
You know, here's the thing. And like, you know, unfortunately, because of scheduling, you know, I took on a lot of stuff this year. Eli has taken on a lot of stuff this year, so we haven't been able to do the recap show. So it's something that we have, you know, something we necessarily haven't been able to talk about in kind of a recap form, since we're pretty much, you and I are just breaking down or are previewing the games. I have a question for you. Does Kelvin Benjamin look 100% healthy? Because I don't think he does.
I don't think anybody is really 100% healthy anytime.
But you know what I mean. He's coming off of a serious knee injury, and he does not look explosive to me.
Yeah. Well, if you're basing it off of watching him last week, I don't think that.
No,
it's really
I'm not. I'm basing it off of watching all three games.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that he looks 100%, but I do think that he is big enough and is, you know, strong enough as a route runner right now to be a top 12 receiver.
And see, I don't. I honestly don't. I think he is extremely touchdown dependent. And like, you know, and the numbers we saw against San Francisco, the numbers we saw against Denver, I think those are going, I mean, the thing he benefits from the most is the division he plays against has some of the worst pass defenses in the NFL.
Exactly. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. I mean, getting two matchups against New Orleans and against Tampa Bay is, I mean, that's amazing. That's for me, it's absolutely amazing there. And then, you know, if you look at his, you know, stretch run, he gets San Diego, Washington, Atlanta. I understand Atlanta just shut him out, but I'm not really worried about that matchup at all.
Not Atlanta. Atlanta. They're playing Atlanta this weekend. He's playing Atlanta this weekend.
Oh, sorry, against Minnesota. I'm sorry. Yeah, so that's the thing is, like, you know, if you look at the stretch, he has an amazing schedule there.
Disagree, he has amazing schedule there. He get week 12, Oakland. You know, that's a good game.
That's a strong, strong game. Week, Seattle is bad.
Here we start moving into the fantasy playoffs. Week 13 versus Seattle, bad. Week 14, he's going to line up against Jason Verrett in versus San Diego.
Yeah.
Bad. Week 15 against Washington against Josh Norman.
Yeah.
Bad. You know, and then we'll see how he does week 16 against Atlanta. So, you know, we'll get a little preview this week. I think Kelvin Benjamin is a sell high.
Yeah, I disagree. The thing is like, you know, those matchups are bad, but he already went into Denver and had an amazing game.
All
so,
right.
like, I'm not really worried
about
that.
Another brag bet here. Kelvin Benjamin will not be a top 18 receiver rest of the season. Week four on.
Put it on the brag bet board.
All right, let's do it. All right, Atlanta versus Carolina. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to take Carolina.
I'm going to take Carolina at home as well. I'm sorry, no, they're on the road. I'll still take Carolina.
Doesn't matter either way.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go ahead and move on. Oakland at Baltimore. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
Woo, I think Joe Flacco is a viable start this week against Oakland. Oakland has been hideous against the wide receiver, well, against quarterbacks and wide receivers this year. You know, overall, Flacco is one of the leading, the Ravens are passing a ton because they don't have a viable rushing game. I think that if you are in need of a quarterback this week, he is certainly on my radar. He's also going to be on the DFS show, but I have Flacco as my number 7 quarterback this week. And again, Oakland has just been hideous on defense. If you look at, you know, again, against quarterbacks or against the wide receiver position. They've just been terrible. So they faced, the first 2 weeks they did have Atlanta and New Orleans, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So, you can definitely, say like that's a, kind of the reason they've been so bad. But, and they did look better against Tennessee, but it's kind of easy to look that way. But again, like when you look at, so far this year, they've given up the third most fantasy points to quarterbacks thus far and then have been hideous against the wide receiver position. I think that this is a really nice game for Wallace and for Joe Flacco in particular. And, I definitely will see how this running back, group kind of continues to work itself out. But Kenneth Dixon is the ad. I don't think he's going to be a running back one, which is the way a lot of people seem to be viewing him on Twitter. Everybody's like, oh, Kenneth Dixon. Until we get Kenneth Dixon back, we, can't look at this team any certain way. I mean, he's a solid, I think that he's going to be a solid ad, and, you might be able to, use him as a flex option at points this year. But at least for now, I think that until he comes back, you can't rely on anything in this running game. And that's why I think Flacco is going to just air the hell out of the ball this week.
And, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think Dixon is a running back one by any stretch of the imagination. But he is available in like 80-something% of leagues on ESPN.
Yeah, that's insane.
So, I mean, like, go ahead and add him, because Week 5 is looking like a realistic target for him. The guy I want to talk about is on the same team, different position, because I think Dennis Pitta is a really nice play this week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Against Oakland, who is pretty atrocious against the tight end. Dennis Pitta is available in 40% of leagues and has gotten a decent amount of targets every game. And I think this is a good week for him to exploit the Oakland secondary and linebacking core and possibly get in the end zone. So I really like Dennis Pitta if you are struggling at tight end right now.
Fourth in targets thus far among all tight ends. Yeah. Only one behind only one behind Jordan Reed, two behind Kyle Rudolph, and three behind Greg Olsen for the season. I mean, that's enough said for me. If you look at him in PPR scoring, he is seventh thus far, and that's only getting four targets in week one. And he's not even scoring touchdowns. He has no touchdowns yet. So mm-hmm. As soon as you start scoring, you might see a bump in production as well. I love Pitta. I mean, again, I think we've given him props multiple times on this show for just being able to come back from all the hip problems and stuff. But, you got to give him credit. And I think that this is also a very good matchup for him. They haven't the Raiders haven't been nearly as bad as they were last season against tight ends, but they still are bottom eight in tight end points given up thus far. They faced Kobe Fleener, Jacob Tammy, and didn't even get Delaney Walker last week. So, I mean, that's something to say there.
Mm-hmm. Real quick before we pick the game, what do you think about the backfield in Oakland?
I think that, from it? Yeah, like if you have Latavius Murray, I think that he is being, his value is being hidden by the fact that he's scored touchdowns in, I believe, each mm-hmm. of the first 3 weeks of the season, if I'm not mistaken. And, the fact of the matter is here is that you have Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington both of them eating into his carries. We actually looked into this a little bit last week, and the snaps have, continued to be a problem, for Latavius Murray. And
last week, I felt like DeAndre Washington easily outplayed Murray.
Yeah, and Richard outplayed him in week one just based on that one run alone. I mean, the 80-yard run. The snap percentages last week, you have 48% for Murray, 20% for Richard, and 28% for Washington. That's how it kind of shook out. I'm not buying Murray. If you can sell him high, I'm absolutely in to do that.
If you can't, you need to pick up. I'm going to say Washington's the handcuff.
For now, yeah, I would say Washington. But I will say that if Murray were to go down, it would be a
50-50 split. But I think both Richard and Washington could do a lot with a 50-50 split.
Yeah, I will say in PPR, I would definitely lean Washington. But I think in standard, I would make sure that if I had to choose between the two, I would go Richard, just because I think that he would assume the goal line work. And he would probably get a lot of the red zone looks as well. So, that's just kind of something to think about.
I do agree with you. I wouldn't mind selling low on Latavius Murray.
I wouldn't either. I think that there's a ton of guys that you can probably get from Murray right now. And
especially considering he's had a touchdown every week. I mean, I bet you could probably still get 75 cents on the dollar.
Here's a question for you. If you are the Le'Veon Bell owner mm-hmm. and you do not have D'Angelo Williams, okay. would you give
yes.
Latavius Murray to yes. get D'Angelo Williams? And I agree with that, especially if you have
another running back, like let's say you have Christine Michael. I mean, there's a reasonable expectation that you drafted you drafted Bell, Michael, and Latavius Murray. Three guys mm-hmm. that went in three different tiers. Yeah. If I've got someone like Michael, if I've got, you know, even someone like Matt Jones, yeah, I'm totally fine trading Latavius Murray to make sure my handcuff is okay. Because I think you could get Williams and another piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
You know?
Probably mix in a Dorsett if you needed to, or you know, somebody lower level like that, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Oakland at Baltimore, who you got?
I'm going to go Baltimore.
I'm going to go Baltimore because they're at home. Oakland traveling east. Though Oakland was east last week, so maybe that's not as big of an issue because they may have just stayed on the East Coast.
Yeah. Do, you know, do not swear, worry about Amari Cooper. Yeah. Well, that's fine, too. I'm going to go the Ravens, even though they're the worst 3-0 team ever, possibly. you know, but I do want to say, like, I've seen a few people, especially in my leagues, a little bit worried about Amari Cooper. Please do not be worried about Amari Cooper. He's on the brink, everybody. Mm-hmm. He's on the brink.
This could be the week.
Yeah, this could be the... I mean, Jimmy Smith isn't anything amazing. So, you know, this definitely could be the week. He is still getting heavily targeted. 11, 9, and 9 are his three targets, or three target totals for the first 3 weeks of the season.
I'd
15
really like
receptions
to see
in those.
Oakland's offensive coordinator move him around a little bit more, too, though. You know, why not play him out of the slot on occasion? Why not move him around the field, try to create some mismatches, as opposed to just keeping him on the outside? I really feel like they're misusing his skill set.
Absolutely. And they're not giving him red zone looks enough, at least. I mean, that's one bit of my biggest problem. If you are going to make one case against Cooper, it's not the talent. It's not anything
it's
like that.
It's the fact that,
they don't move him around in formations, and Crabtree is definitely used more in the red zone. They also like to look for Seth Roberts, as we saw last week against Tennessee, which makes me want to bang my head through a wall. And then Andre Holmes as well also gets thrown red zone looks above Mari Cooper. And then they also heavily rely on the running backs. So it's just a situation that really pisses me off as far as Cooper, especially once they hit the red zone. But again, I'm not shying away from Cooper at all. I think that he has no touchdowns this year and is still putting up solid numbers overall. So I don't think that there's any way you can sell him. If there's somebody that's willing to buy or to sell him at all, I would certainly be willing to kind of get on top of that.
And I love Clive Walford, but he cannot keep dropping balls the way he is.
Yeah, he's going to be inconsistent. He's not I thought he was going to be one of the lower level tight ends that we could rely on or just rely on for a little more consistency. And he's just not there yet, which is, it's fine.
But it's not by lack of targets.
No, it's not.
He's dropping a ton of balls.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next game. Talk about the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. Mike, what's your takeaway?
This won't be my takeaway, but I love Marvin Jones to my core. I don't know what else to really say other than Marvin Jones is going to end up being a number one, at least a number one wide receiver. Could be a top five guy when it's all said and done. Right now, he's the number one wide receiver in all fantasy in standard scoring and in PPR for that matter. There's nothing more for me to say on Marvin Jones. I just want to say that I'm so happy that this is happening, and I hope it continues. They finally raised his price in DFS, which is kind of upsetting. But Jordan Howard has to be the biggest takeaway from this game. He is going to be the starting running back for the mighty Chicago Bears heading into this week. I certainly think he is. I'm assuming he's added in all your leagues, but if he hasn't been added, he needs to be. He has looked good, and he's been getting a good amount of receptions as well. I have him as my 17th running back for this week. I think that he is, a candidate to do pretty well. So, Detroit's run defense hasn't been amazing. We're going to be seeing a ton of, use for Jordan Howard overall. I mean, he had six targets in the pass game last week, four of those for receptions, 47 yards, also rushed for 45 yards on 9 rushes. Langford's going to be out probably 4 to 6 weeks. And I think that we can rely on Howard to at least get, running back 3 numbers through that time, and he might keep the job the rest of the way. Langford will probably come back and assume his passing game role, but I think Howard, like I predicted before the season started, Howard is a better fit for this John Fox offense, even though John Fox hates rookies, and I think that he's gonna be fine going forward. So I love me some Jordan Howard. I think he's gonna be a nice running back 2-3 for this week and moving forward as well.
I completely agree with you, and I will just add a ditto onto that. Let's talk about the other running back situation over in Detroit. And can I get a little bit of love for my Theo Riddick hate last week?
Yeah, you can. I mean, dude, Green Bay's run defense, though, is absolutely vicious up the middle. I mean, they are vicious.
But, I mean, Dwayne Washington, I think, is the better up-the-middle running back. I think Detroit knows that. I think Theo Riddick, like, the idea that Theo Riddick was going to become the man because Amir Abdullah is on IR, I think, was an insane proposition.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the whole idea that, you know, everybody's like, oh, Theo Riddick now, you know, let's talk about him as an RB1. That was crazy. Like, absolutely.
Well, in PPR
insane.
Leagues, I don't think it's crazy in PPR leagues.
No,
just
it
because...
still is crazy in PPR leagues. He's an RB2, which is good, you know, but he's not an RB1. Let's be honest here.
He could be. I mean, right now he's still an RB1 in PPR leagues. He's the 12th best running back.
No way. Is he really?
Yeah. He's one ahead of Devontae Freeman.
I'm looking this up while you talk.
According to what I'm seeing, he is 12th on the PPR running back list. But, you know, that's the thing, is that he's going to continue to get a good floor. And if you looked at the second half, he actually started to break away a few runs. I mean, it wasn't amazing, but he was just getting hit right before the line of scrimmage on almost every single run. But 16 receptions already this year for 130 yards. That's why he is a, you know, borderline PPR one.
I am just outside of a PPR one RB.
Well, regardless, he's close. He's in that area. And, you know, if you look at Detroit's schedule, it's not terrible. You know, I mean, they do get Green Bay again.
He's in that area, but then you've got guys that we probably both love outside of the PPR one that I would expect to pass him, including Ezekiel Elliott, Christine Michael, Le'Veon Bell, who hasn't, of course, scored any points, Todd Gurley. So, I mean, you know, like, don't get me wrong. I like Riddick, especially in PPR formats, but I think the hype was overblown. I think we saw that last week.
Yeah, I mean, based on what you got him, though, I think you have to ride it out. There's really no way to sell him as far as Dwayne watching.
You missed your chance to sell him last week.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you can't really sell him at this point. You know, as far as Dwayne Washington is concerned, I still love him to death. I know I talked about him a lot last week, but he's a stud, in my opinion.
And, I mean, you know, I know the numbers didn't look good coming out of last week, but he looked like a really strong downhill runner, which is what you want to see and what Detroit hasn't had for a long, long time.
Exactly. You know, I mean, last week you saw Riddick get 16 touches in a game script that really wasn't great for him. That really was great for him because they were down. But you also saw Dwayne Washington get 11 touches. And, you know, if you look at kind of how the snaps worked out, you know, Riddick still got a heavy amount, you know, 66%. Mm-hmm. But we did see Washington get all the way up to 40%. Really nice to see. He's going to be the goal line back for them. And, you know, I think that they are going to play in a lot, you know, closer games moving forward, and we'll be able to rely on him, you know, in the goal line areas. So you have a Detroit team that, as fast as you might assume they are offensively, they, you know, kind of are a little bit slower. They're in the bottom third of the league. And I think that they are going to continue to try and, you know, just use multiple guys in this offense. You know, Washington might not break out right now, but the second half of the season, I really like his prospects. And, you know, I think as we move on, you know, especially the next couple weeks, we might see people kind of sour on him a bit if he doesn't have any breakout games. And, you know, to be honest, like, Chicago is a really nice matchup this week, but Philadelphia isn't, LA isn't, and then we have Washington. So, you know, if you see the next few weeks, you know, Dwayne Washington getting dropped or people just kind of souring on him a bit, you know, maybe capitalize and, you know, try and get him in the second half of the season, because you have, in the after the week 10 bye, you have Jacksonville, then you have a tough matchup against Minnesota, then you got New Orleans, Chicago,
yeah,
the Giants,
yeah,
Dallas.
Yeah, the playoff matchups, New Orleans, Chicago, the Giants, Dallas. I mean, those are, you know, especially if you don't play in week 17, which you shouldn't, you know, you could have a really nice playoff run, with Dwayne Washington and Theo Riddick for that matter.
Yeah. We're buying Dwayne Washington.
Yeah, for sure. Detroit at Chicago. Mike, who you got?
Detroit.
Yep. Detroit. Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about your game. That is the Denver Broncos at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Oh, I'm so upset at the way the game ended last week. I didn't even get to watch it live because in Nashville, like, I can't watch it live. And Jameis Winston, when I saw the final play, I just, like, I love Winston, and he has developed amazingly. But what the hell were you thinking the last play? I just don't get it. You know, it was the weirdest thing for me in the world. So hopefully, you know, stuff like that kind of gets cleaned up.
I fell asleep on the couch and woke up, and I was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah, wait a minute. He didn't even scramble. He just kind of trotted. Why did he trot? Why are you trotting? And continuing to fake throw the ball, even though you're 15 yards ahead of the line of scrimmage, you idiot. But no, I think that this is going to be a real tough game to really gauge, because I know a lot of people are on Trevor Siemian this week, and I love him this week. I have him as I believe he's a quarterback one start for me if I can find him. But I have him as my number 10 quarterback play this week. And that's just surely because the Buccaneers, I mean, Case Keenum threw two touchdowns against the Bucs last week. And not only were they two touchdowns, Brian Quick, who we haven't heard of since what, 2014 now, something like that.
My boy.
Yeah, your boy. He was wide open. It wasn't just wide open. It was like there was nobody within 10 yards of him. He just waltzed into the end zone. And then Tavon Austin later in the game. This is Case Keenum, the Rams, who didn't have one offensive score going into week three. And then you had Tavon Austin catch a ball and then literally walk into the end zone about 15 yards. So this is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers secondary that is disgustingly bad. Disgustingly bad. It's
atrocious, yeah.
Yeah, atrocious is one word to put it. There is no words for how bad this secondary is. So when you relay that into fantasy production, yes, Trevor Siemian, absolutely starting this week. Top 10 guy for me, like I said. As far as your wide receivers go, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, automatic starts. There's really nothing for me to look for in this game. I think you start all of the pass catchers for Denver. I don't think this will be an amazing week for C.J. Anderson, but I do think he'll do fine. He has the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. That's something the Bucs have kind of struggled with a little bit this year that a lot of people don't really look at. Everybody's automatically assuming that the Bucs are just as good at run defense as they were last year, which is kind of true up the middle. But as far as the receiving end of things,
I have C.J. Anderson as my number one running back.
Yeah, the Bucs have already given up over 230 yards and 16 receptions to running backs this year. Last year, they halted running backs in that category. So they're not as good against the run as people might think, and they certainly are not good against the pass at all. So that's pretty much my takeaway here. As far as Mike Evans, he's the number two wide receiver in fantasy. And yes, this is a terrible matchup, but it doesn't really matter when you're getting targeted much.
And they may need to throw quite a bit if they're down.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Humphries in deep leagues, a lot of people might not know him, but Adam Humphries and Cameron Brate, for that matter, are decent bets in deep leagues just because the tight end position is a position that a lot of, the Denver Broncos have had some struggle with in the past. And Adam Humphries is a slot receiver that, will get Bradley Roby as opposed to, Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, and, has been getting heavily targeted as well. So, I mean, that's just kind of a place to look at if you're in deep leagues, but again, it's the Denver defense.
All right. Let's see. Broncos at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who you got, Mike?
Buccaneers in the upset. Why not?
I'm taking Denver. Let's go ahead and move on to LA at Arizona. You gotta think the takeaway this week is all about Carson Palmer. I mean, looked absolutely atrocious against the Bills last week. Through God knows how many interceptions. I think this is a week where he can kind of get healthy, get things back on track and reestablish himself. But, I'll ask you, do you think he's still an elite quarterback in this league?
I don't think he's an elite quarterback, but I do think he has an amazing week.
Yeah, I think he gets back on track, but I think it's a time where we start really discussing whether this is kind of the end of Carson Palmer.
It's not looking good, and he hasn't looked amazing really since the second half last year, and that's kind of my worry with him, which, I mean, you and I both were very high on Palmer coming into this year. We thought he was going too low in drafts, and, we thought that this was a situation where the Arizona offense was just going to be kind of a, something that's in sync and, going to be awesome all year, and, really, like I said, we just really have not seen him do well since the second half last year. It's week 12 on, he has no games other than the Tampa Bay game where he's thrown for three touchdowns or more, and he also only threw for 300 yards in, two of them after, which one was against LA and one was against Minnesota last year. So, we're seeing a longer list of work here where he is not putting up nice numbers.
Mm-hmm. And, don't get me wrong, he's got some interesting matchups. especially kind of towards the end of the season. You know, week 12 Atlanta, week 13 Washington, week 14 Miami, week 15 New Orleans. Unfortunately, finishes week 16 at Seattle. But I mean, he's got a really interesting schedule after the bye, after the week 9 bye. So maybe he is a buy low target after week 8 because, I mean, he gets two decent matchups here, but then he's got the Jets, Seattle, and Carolina before the week 9 bye. But I think after that Carolina matchup, I might be trying to buy low on him just for the stretch run.
Yeah, I will say I think that this is going to be a great game. I mean, Arizona's top six in passing attempts. David Johnson is implemented in that. I mean, he's an amazing pass catcher. Borderline, I'd say he's a top three running back pass catcher in this league. So, you know, I think that the Rams, you know, they've gotten kind of a cake schedule in terms of the pass catchers they've seen. San Francisco is obviously terrible. They don't have any pass catchers. Seattle, they saw Russell Wilson kind of hobbled and didn't have the opportunity to really. Doug Baldwin was hurt as well. And then, you know, Jameis Winston last week threw for what, three touchdowns against them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the thing here is I think that this is going to be a week for Arizona where everybody is going to be off of them, especially in DFS. Everybody's going to be off of them based on what they did in Buffalo. And I think they will turn things around. I like Michael Floyd again this week. I will continue to be a huge proponent of him until he kind of proves otherwise, as long as he comes back from the concussion problems. I know he's in the concussion protocol. So we'll see if he ends up being active. Hopefully he is. And, you know, see what happens there. But I do think that this is a turnaround game for them.
David Johnson is the number one the number two non-quarterback scoring player in fantasy football in standard leagues. Can you guess what the number one is?
You said number two overall scorer in fantasy?
Other than non-quarterback.
Non-quarterback. Man, I would say, I don't know, maybe Blunt? LeGarrette Blunt, maybe?
No,
Marvin Jones?
LeGarrette Blunt right below him. Marvin Jones right below him. You'll never get it. The Minnesota defense. How crazy is that, right?
Wow.
Minnesota defense has scored 60 points in ESPN standard scoring. David Johnson has scored 53 points.
I mean, Minnesota had, what, the multiple touchdowns in week one, and I think they scored last week as well. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
So, I just thought that was funny. I was looking through it. All right. Arizona versus L.A. Mike, who you got?
Arizona. Not close.
Arizona. All right, let's go ahead and move on. New Orleans versus San Diego. What's your takeaway, Mike?
I don't think that this is going to be as high scoring as people think. I'm going to go and lean, you know, this is kind of a DFS take, but I think this is going to be more of a running back game. Melvin Gordon and Mark Ingram are my two, you know, essentially top guys in this. I have Melvin Gordon as my number two running back this week. He's getting heavy touches. New Orleans, you know, across the board is terrible on all facets of defense, but especially against running backs this season. They're giving up, what is it, already giving up 413 rushing yards and almost 200 receiving yards, seven total touchdowns in three games. Not much. I mean, and they're facing, you know, the Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings combo. Actually, no Rashad Jennings that week. So Shane Vereen combo and the Giants. Oakland, they faced Jalen Richard, gave up an 80-yard touchdown, and Latavius Murray gave up a touchdown. And then Atlanta, that, you know, justifiably, they faced two talented guys there. But Melvin Gordon is just every bit as talented as everybody they faced, and they get them in San Diego. I love the matchup overall. Philadelphia or San Diego has been a team that has moved slower in terms of pace. I think a lot of people kind of forget that. So I think that in order to kind of neutralize the offense, the New Orleans offense, that the San Diego Chargers will kind of slow things down, go with Melvin Gordon, and, you know, kind of let it ride. So I really like Gordon this week and Mark Ingram as the focal points.
I kind of like what you're saying right there. I don't know what the over under is yet for that game, but
it's the highest. It's the highest among all the games, and
probably
that's
54 or something like that, maybe even higher.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd probably take the under on that too. But I will tweet out my article of picks this week. Hopefully, I rebounded a little bit in week three, but not nearly as well as I wish I had. So hopefully, week four is strong for me. The guy I want to talk about is Michael Thomas. Because this guy is a stud in the making.
Yeah, if he didn't drop, he had a couple drops last week that I didn't care for.
There's going to be some rookie mistakes in that kind of regard, but man, does he look good when he gets a red zone look.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
You know, I mean, I think Michael Thomas could turn out to be one of the best wide receivers from this draft.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. I've been on Michael Thomas since, you know, he was mm-hmm. drafted with New Orleans. He did get the benefit of not having Willie Snead mm-hmm. play, you know, so I mean we'll kind of take that with a grain of salt there, but you know, Thomas looks great. There's not much to really add there. I think that he is going to be startable in multiple games this year, you know, especially based on
this New Orleans offense.
Because
Willie Snead, you know, still questionable, you know, was limited in practice on Wednesday, so we'll see kind of. You know, it's a short week turnaround. Well, he didn't play on Monday, so it's not that short of a week, I guess. But I really like Michael Thomas, even if Willie Snead's in the game, because mm-hmm. I think if he's the third option out of the wide receivers, he could see quite a bit of work. I mean, look at what Brandon Coleman did last week.
Yeah, true. If you look, last week Thomas got 11 targets. The week before that, when Snead was in, he still got 5. So I think that you can still expect a target floor of 5 to 6 each week. And, you know, that's nice. I mean, at least mm-hmm. as a wide receiver 4 or wide receiver 3 in deeper formats.
Especially
as we
get into the bye weeks, you know, he could become pretty valuable.
I will say we're seeing Kobe Fleener kind of get things back on track here.
Yeah. So, do you think that was a product of the game last week, or do you think that's something that we should be looking at as maybe he is back on track?
No, I think he's going to get back on track. If you look at the targets in week 1, he got 4, you know, and there was a heavy amount of buzz that Fleener wasn't on the same page as Drew Brees. Then the second week, you kind of see it on the field that Fleener is getting the routes down a little bit more in the offense, but he's not making plays. He had 8 targets and wasn't able to secure, you know, I think he only secured 6 of them. But then last week, 11 targets. And I think that this is a situation where he's finally able to, kind of accrue or get that offense kind of down a little bit. You know, he finally, you know, I mentioned the week 2 targets, getting 8 of them. He only caught 2 of them, you know, multiple drops. Last week, he kind of held the drops, got the drops in check, you know, secured 7 of those 11 targets for 100 yards and a touchdown. I think that he's going to finally be that top 7 tight end that we've been looking for this year. And he might be on your waiver wire in shallow formats just because people were pissed. He might not be anymore since he had an amazing week last week. But, you know, we're seeing a situation where I think Fleener is going to be fine.
All right. Let's see. New Orleans at San Diego. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go San Diego.
I'm going to go New Orleans. I got to win eventually. Tell us at San Francisco. What's your takeaway, Mike?
Cole Beasley, I think, will have an amazing game.
That was going to be my takeaway.
Yeah, I think that he's gaining a little bit more momentum this week as well as we're kind of going on and people are researching it a little bit more. But I certainly like what Cole Beasley has been doing these first few weeks of the season. We're seeing Dez Bryant now with that, you know, slight fracture in his knee. And, you know, that's certainly something that can be a problem for him. I don't know if we have an exact timetable. He might even play this week. We don't know.
He's listed as questionable.
Yeah, which we don't know whether it's probable or not, you know, whatever it might be. But the first 3 weeks of the season, we've seen Beasley, you know, have the most targets on the Dallas Cowboys as far as pass catchers are concerned. Had 12 in week 1, 6 and 7 the last 2 weeks respectively. I like him a ton. He's being looked at, like I said, heavily as far as targets are concerned. And then he's also had 60 plus yards in each week. Really nice floor for him. So mm-hmm. I think that this is a situation, especially in PPR formats, where he has a start. Even in standard formats, he doesn't get a ton of red zone looks, and he's not a big guy. So, I mean,
if Brian is out.
Yeah, he might be looked at in the red zone for sure. I mean, you might see a little bit of Bryce Butler. You might see Witten. Witten's been getting targeted a ton as well. But regardless, I think Beasley has a really nice floor in PPR leagues. Certainly going to be a DFS play for me this week. And on top of that, an angle that people really aren't looking at is, you know, when you look at pace, again, you know, you have San Francisco up at top, you know, because they have the Chip Kelly offense. They're running the most plays among anybody in football. The Dallas Cowboys, you know, if you have a team that's running more plays, that means you're going to be running more plays, just kind of counteracted to that. So this is going to be a situation where I think Dallas is going to be, you know, again, in a situation where they can run more plays and Beasley might get more opportunity. I love him as a play this week.
All right. That was my takeaway, so we're just going to move on to the next game. Dallas at San Francisco, who you got, Mike?
You don't want to say anything about Carlos Hyde, who is not getting any love, even though he's being used insanely well, no?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, I mean, Carlos Hyde was my boy. Chip Kelly, I had Chip Kelly's back when he came to San Francisco. I don't know what there really is to say.
Why is he running him in the fourth quarter when he got two touchdowns in the fourth quarter last week, even when they were down like a tremendous amount?
So you play to win the game. You keep running him out there.
Well, that's what I'm saying as far as that's a good thing because
it's a great thing.
Because we were worried, at least I was worried, that you know, with San Francisco losing so many games and going to be blown out in a ton of games, that Carlos Hyde wouldn't be able to get touchdowns.
I don't think they will get blown out in a ton of games.
Yeah, they might not.
You know, like, don't get me wrong, like, the Carolina loss didn't look great, but that game was closer than it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you watch
Carolina and San Fran, like, that was a very close game.
Yeah, I mean, San Francisco could have won that game easily.
They put up 17 points in the fourth quarter and made it a damn good game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think they're – I mean, this was definitely a blowout. It was a blowout from the start. I mean, they got blown out early. You know, it was like 14-0 before he even looked. Sure, that's going to be an issue at times. But I think for the most part, I think San Francisco is going to stay in a lot of games.
The only reason I'm bringing it up is I think that – the fact that Carlos Hyde got those late touchdowns tells me that he is going to be used the whole game, regardless of the score. And I feel comfort in that. So if you have Carlos Hyde, he is a guy that I'm holding steady with. And I think he's going to be a top, you know, at least running back one this year, possibly a top 10 guy.
Yeah. I mean, I was big on him and, you know, the Chip Kelly offense coming into the season. Listen to this playoff, this kind of stretch run schedule at Miami, at Chicago, home for the Jets, at Atlanta, at LA. It's a pretty good stretch run.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and not to mention, they still have games against Tampa Bay and New Orleans on the schedule. So, yeah I think it's going to be a good year for Carlos Hyde, as long as he's healthy. So, that's my only fear.
Let's pray.
Exactly. All right. San Francisco at Dallas. Who you got, Mike?
I'm going to go San Fran.
I'm with you. I like that call. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about Kansas City at Pittsburgh, the Sunday night game. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Return of Le'Veon Bell. That's, I think, whatever.
Oh, is that happening?
That is happening. That is happening, and I am ecstatic about it because I have him in multiple places.
Me too.
And with running back, the position just being so in flux this year, it's awesome that we get, you know, Le'Veon Bell to return. Hopefully he plays more than six games like he did last year, but he was a running back one during that time. He absolutely was. And T'Angelo Williams was essentially just phased out of the offense. Can I guarantee that will happen now? I can't, because, you know, I do think that Pittsburgh, if they have any sanity in their minds, don't want to run him out as much as they did last year, which equated to him being out for the season with a MCL sprain or MCL tear, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll kind of check that out. That's certainly what I'm going to be looking for in this game, is how often and, you know, what the usage is for Le'Veon Bell. But I do think, regardless of whether they implement, you know, D'Angelo Williams a ton or a little bit in this game, that Le'Veon Bell is going to be a focal point of the offense. I love this game for DFS in terms of Pittsburgh. Big Ben has thrown for three touchdowns or more at home in each and every game since, I believe, week 12 last season, and or dating back to week 12 last season. And Antonio Brown has amazing stats at home compared to on the road. It's pretty ridiculous. I don't have them off the top of my head, but it's a pretty big split. Le'Veon Bell returning, all of this mixed in with the fact that Casey had such a big game last week, I think, especially in DFS, a lot of people are going to be a little bit off the Steelers, especially since Big Ben had a terrible game against Philly. And again, the Chiefs had an amazing game on their end. So this is going to be an amazing game for the Steelers. I think it's going to be an absolute blowout, an absolute shit show. And as far as the Chiefs go, we'll kind of check out and see if Jamal Charles plays. I'm hoping he does. That way we can get a little bit of a look at him. Even if he doesn't.
Yeah, even if he does, though, he's not startable.
No, he's not startable if he plays, but it is nice to get a look at him. I think Macklin and Kelce are the only guys that I would feel comfortable starting. Ware is fine, I guess, if you want to go that route. But Kelce, you know, Pittsburgh has had some leakage against tight ends so far and last season as well. That can certainly be a problem for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I just think it's going to be a lot of garbage time, and Macklin and Kelce will probably do a lot of the eating on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ware is a good play this week. I have no problem with Ware. I like the Pittsburgh defense this week as a streaming defense.
Sure, yeah.
You know, if you're struggling, I know, like, I'm in a couple leagues where, like, the defenses I drafted were not very good. I waited and kind of took the, you know, just said, oh, I'm going to stream the whole year. And so if you're like me and you're streaming a lot of your defenses the whole year, Pittsburgh is a defense that's widely available that I'm definitely willing to take a shot on, especially with Kansas City on the road.
Yeah.
All right. Kansas City at Pittsburgh. Mike, who you got?
Pittsburgh by 40.
I'm not going to. I will take Kansas City plus 40.
Nah, it won't be 40, but I do think that the Steelers mop the floor with them. I really do.
All right, let's move on to Monday Night Football. Wrap this thing up. Giants at Minnesota. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Yeah, we saw Jerry McKinnon get the start and get a ton of the running back work last week. I think Asiata got, you know, 6 or 7 touches, and, you know, Jerry McKinnon got, I believe, 13 or 14 off the top of my head. To me, that tells me, and that was in a pretty positive game script for Matt Asiata. The Minnesota team was pretty much up a lot of the game. They had the game pretty much in their control, and they still went with Jerry McKinnon, which I think is an amazing kind of development for him and his value for the rest of the way. You gotta love that this North Turner system kind of primarily runs in shotgun. He is an amazing pass catcher, a spark slash athletic freak. He played on 65% of the snaps last week compared to Asiata's 35%. I think that this is a sentiment that McKinnon is going to have a lot of value this year, and he is going to be a strong running back too, especially in PPR formats. So if we were kind of taking away something from last week's game, I think it's that Asiata's stock is going down and that McKinnon's value is going up for me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think McKinnon is definitely the guy to own in that backfield. There's not much else to talk about in this game except for how awesome Sterling Shepard has been this season.
Oh, he's been great. Absolutely great.
You know, and I think this will continue.
You know, I agree.
When I said Mike Thomas has the chance to be one of the best, I didn't say the best because I think Sterling Shepard is by far has been the best rookie wide receiver this year and running away with rookie of the year at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's scored in 2 of 3 games. He's had, you know, 7 or more targets in 2 of 3 games. Heavily looked at in the red zone. Not much bad to say.
And perfect compliment to Odell Beckham. I mean, really just, you know, a guy that gives them another option, which they haven't had since Victor Cruz tore his patellar tendon a couple years ago.
Yeah, and great efficiency. I mean, he's catching 84% of his targets thus far. Mm-hmm. That's better than Odell Beckham at 63%. That's better than Victor Cruz at 73%. That's better than the crazy tight end duo between Will Tye and Larry Donnell, which I just don't understand. Both
no
targeted the exact
no
same
does.
Amount as well. It's insane. But yeah, I agree with you on Shepard. I don't think people are talking about him enough either. He's just kind of flying under the radar because Odell Beckham's on the team and Victor Cruz is coming back from that massive injury, you know, but right now he's quietly putting up the 14th best wide receiver numbers in 3 weeks. And I mean, that's ahead of Willie Snead, DeAndre Hopkins, Terrell Pryor, Emmanuel Sanders, Jordan Matthews, Julio Jones, Eric Decker, Allen Robinson. I mean, those are all guys, mind you, that we're going to see things regress and kind of, you know, things kind of correct themselves a bit,
sure.
But Shepard is a bona fide wide receiver too. I have no problem with that.
I don't think
he's
a wide receiver too this week because the matchup
is so
difficult.
For the season though.
Like right now I'm trying to decide between him and Jordan Howard in a half point PPR league. And like I'm probably going to go with Jordan Howard.
Yeah, it's guaranteed touches.
Exactly. Because I love, like I said, Minnesota's got is the highest scoring non-quarterback in fantasy. The Minnesota defense is. it's legit. The defense there is legit. And Sam Bradford is doing just enough there to not put the defense in bad spots.
Yeah, I have Shepard as my 36th wide receiver this week. Everybody else has him at 25 or higher, you know, in terms of our ranks. As far as Minnesota goes, I mean, this isn't a fantasy topic, but you know, something that we kind of relay for baseball, you know, you give up whatever you can to win now. And I give them full credit for paying the first round and possibly second round pick for Sam Bradford to try and win a Super Bowl this year. They don't have AP. They don't have Teddy Bridgewater, but the defense is so good. And Sam Bradford is good enough with his arm, and the offense is good enough in terms of their pass catchers. They haven't even been using Laquon Treadwell, their first round draft pick, that I think this team legitimately has a chance to win a Super Bowl, and they wouldn't have been able to do so with Sean Hill behind that quarterback. So I give them all credit for doing that. I know it's a non-fantasy
3-0. Yeah, 3-0 to start the year.
Yeah.
All right, Minnesota at home versus the New York Giants. Who you got, Mike?
This is a tough game for me. I really want to take the Giants. I'm going to take the Giants, even though I don't feel comfortable with it. And I know it's Minnesota at home. I think that this is a trap game for the Vikings.
I'm going Vikings.
You would.
I will.
I could be really stupid, but you know the games. The
I think it's
football's
gonna be
a
really close
sport.
Game, but I like that defense is so good, and the Giants defense sucks. All right, let's go ahead. Let's wrap things up, Mike. Let me tell people where you can reach and what you're working on.
Yeah, reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. Shout out to Josh Gordon. I know we didn't really get to him, but shout out to him.
You know what? If you want to take a couple seconds, you know, to kind of talk about that situation, I will let you, and then I will comment.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have a big stance on this as well. But if you haven't heard, which I'm sure you have by this point, you know, he is taking out a time just for himself to kind of get himself right. He obviously has, you know, had a substance abuse problem in years past. That's kind of what got him suspended. And I like that he was able to kind of recognize that enough and, you know, check himself into treatment. We don't know how long he's going to be out. It's kind of a undetermined timetable right now. But, you know, it's not even a fantasy football thing for me. For me, at least, I think that this is the best move he could have made in life. And I'm happy that he, you know, was man enough and brave enough to do that, especially in the public eye with everybody kind of, you know, having comments and questions and concerns about this. I'm just really happy that he was able to do this for himself. And, you know, we'll worry about fantasy football later with him. But I wish him nothing but the best. And I couldn't be happier about the decision.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he got a lot of flack on it. He got a lot of support, but also got a lot of flack of it on Twitter and social media and stuff like that. Which to me, you know, is you know, I love fantasy football. I you know live and breathe fantasy sports. You know, I'm trying. Mike and I are both trying to do it for a living. You know, outside of just our real day or night jobs, things like that. But man. Are some people assholes about it? You know, the things people were tweeting about him because they lost a member of their fantasy football team. This guy needs help. He's reaching out for it finally after years. You know, this has been a 3-year saga in which he has really refused to accept the fact that he has an issue with drugs and alcohol. He's finally going to get help for himself and doing it in a way in which, you know, he could have returned to the NFL next week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the crazy part. Like, his suspension was over. You know, he was going to be reinstated next week. And he took a look at himself in the mirror and made the best decision for him. And I don't know how you can do anything but just applaud the guy for that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, I know we look at players kind of as abstractions in fantasy sports, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, whatever sport you play. But these are real people, and this is a man who is in dire need, a young man in dire need of help. And so, you know, if you pray, feel free to add him in your prayers. If you, you know, if you don't, just kind of, you know, keep him in your thoughts. And if you're an asshole to him on Twitter, stop being an asshole.
Yeah, I already kind of talked to somebody about that earlier. I hope that. That doesn't say a thing.
All right, that's gonna wrap us up, Mike. Thank you for joining us. Did you give your Twitter and say what you're working on?
Yeah, you just reach me on Twitter, all that usual stuff. Check out the DFS pod this week, and you know, good luck to you in your matchups. I know we're hitting week 4 here. It's about a quarter way through the season. You gotta start making moves. I hope that you rely on some of the great work we're getting on the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I'm gonna start putting out a weekly article for football after this week is over, so definitely expect that. It's gonna be all types of different topics each week, depending on my mood and everything. And but Eric Mackey's been doing a great job killing it over there. We have a brand new revamped NFL page that's, you know, awesome. So definitely check out the site. It's been great, and it's just continuing to evolve.
Yep. You reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my football stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. You read my baseball stuff over at FanGraphs. Definitely give us a rate and review. That really helps us out. And other than that, that's going to wrap it up. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic football season.